720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez. How are you? Thanks for being with us tonight and sharing part of your evening with us. Always a joy to be here on the late shift that I used to do a long time ago on Saturdays. Not this one, not weekend, not weekday, I mean.
You've done this one too.
Yeah, I've done this one. In fact, one of the last times I did this, I left the studio and had to punch someone in the throat. Yay.
And you weren't reenacting like a Liam Neeson movie or whatever it is.
No, legit. A guy was going to rob me and take me into an alley. And I was like, no, I'm not really feeling that. So I'm going to punch you in the throat is what I'm going to do. And I did. And it was effective. And I walked away.
And incredibly impressive, by the way.
That was a thing that happened.
Yeah.
Good times. And then another time when I was on filling in on this shift, it was Shark Week. Do you recall that? And then we started calling all the bars in the area to see what shark drink specials, shark-related cocktails they had available. And there's to this day, a rubber shark in the studio, in the producer's booth somewhere.
From the drink they gave me?
From Howl's and Hood. They like brought these weird drinks over, and then one was called like Blood in the Water, and it was like some pink, red, fruity thing with sharks sticking out of it.
And for some reason, Sam Penianovich signed it. And so the shark just says Sam's name on it.
Well, he's wrong. It's mine.
So. I'm going to scribble it out. Here we go.
Good times. Anyway.
Climbing that shark.
Esteemed producer Craig Collins, how are you?
Good. How have you been, Amy?
I'm good.
Have you punched anybody in the throat this week?
No.
Good.
Not a single person.
It's a solid week.
It's an optimist kind of week. No throat punching.
No throat punching.
Are you watching the Olympics?
So much. Yeah. So much Olympics. And I think you get to that point where you're watching sports that I don't even really understand, but that's fine. I can do that.
What's your sport?
The sports that I like are probably swimming and, I don't know, Michael Phelps is pretty cool. Done a lot of really great things.
Sure.
Volleyball still confuses me at times, but I watch that. I know it seems easy, but it's still, I don't know, spike and it hits arms and it counts and somehow people do stuff. And then they block sometimes.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
That's what I watch.
Okay.
What about you?
I like all of it. I love the Olympics for the same reason that I love the NFL draft, because in an instant, you get to see someone's dream happen. And I think that's awesome. So basically, I sob through the entire Olympics and I cry through the NFL draft. But I'm so touched because think about it. You train, they're young people for the most part, and they've trained their whole lives, most of them since they were tiny children, at this one activity. Sometimes they're things that are finished in minutes and they do it. You know, they do the thing they've wanted to do. So on some level, like, it's great when the U.S. wins all these medals. But I just kind of like to watch it because a human being has worked very hard to get whoever gets the gold. And it's cool to see that. Just like the NFL draft when, like, someone goes from I hope I go pro to, oh, my God.
Did you see Lily King win her swimming? She's 19-year-old USA swimmer Lily King.
Yeah.
She seemed just so happy. Just a joy level that probably you'll never get again.
There's that part. They're like this wonderful unfiltered joy that's like on the level of like Cuba Gooding Jr.'s Oscar acceptance. I'm just totally.
What a good reference.
Or what was the guy from Life is Beautiful? Roberto.
Roberto Benigni.
Remember his when he was like, I will make love to the whole audience. And he was so excited to get that Oscar and he promised to make love to everyone at the Academy Awards.
That's really sweet of him. Or super creepy.
Thanks, but no, we're good.
We pass as a group.
No, I'm going to not say yes to that. No. But right, like that kind of unfiltered joy where someone just flips out and isn't trying to be cool about it and not even trying to be like, yeah, I've been here and done this before. But like, no, this is my first rodeo and this is awesome.
You're right. That's better than Michael Phelps. There's something about when he wins, it's almost relief. Because he's so good and he's been doing it for so long that when he won his 200 thing, he was putting his fingers in the air and like pointing. But I think he was just super relieved that he won. Yeah.
He was almost doing like air guns.
He was.
Pew, pew, pew. Which I'm not a fan.
Yeah, guys. Not a fan of air guns?
I mean, it depends. If they're done ironically, it's great.
I got it.
If they're just done because sup, then it's weird.
I'm so glad we called out air guns so early on the show.
I know.
Yeah. They really are stupid, though, if you're doing them seriously. You're right.
Especially if it's somebody you don't know very well, and they're like, hey, what's up?
Pew,
and they,
pew,
like,
pew.
Do the air gun at you. Like, I don't.
Do you think the three bullets is the most ridiculous when they do the pew, 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 as opposed to just doing one? I'm really curious about that.
Wow.
If there's
we're this slap happy and it's only 11:15.
Mm-hmm.
Right on, people. Well, speaking of the Olympics, speaking of the Olympics, we are going to be talking with a practitioner of acupuncture and traditional Chinese medicine about cupping, because we see all these cupping marks all over athletes. And we're going to talk about what are the benefits and how does it work and what's the deal and why are all these elite athletes that are in such top physical form, why are they doing it? And what can we learn from that? And maybe that's something everyone should pay attention to. We're going to be talking with her a little bit later. We're going to talk about the weather because it's going to be super hot. Don't even try to do your hair on Thursday, people. Don't even, because it's going to be so hot. It's just going to like, blech. And we're going to be talking about a really not so great holiday, but it's our own fault that we have it. And it's all about Earth's resources. That's a thing. And we're going to talk to our good friend Rex Hupke. All the things, so many things this evening to talk about. So I'm going to take a break and we're going to get the show underway and talk to all the people about all the things here in just a bit on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez tonight. Esteemed producer Craig Collins is playing all my favorite songs tonight. I am so excited. So if you're watching on the stream, forgive my dancing. I can't stand up because I am sitting and I have to be close to the microphone, but I cannot sit still when some of these fine songs play. There. That's what I have to say about that. All right, my friends, this week it is going to be so unbelievably hot that it is newsworthy. DNA Info has written about it. Lots of people have written about it, that it's going to be something crazy like 105 degrees. I am a Texan, so that doesn't seem particularly alarming to me because I grew up in very hot weather. But nonetheless, it is a big deal here in Chicago because, as we all know, it gets quite humid when the temperatures soar. And so we called up our good friend, Mark Ratzer, who is a meteorologist at the National Weather Service, to join us. Hi, Mark. How are you? Thanks for joining us tonight. You there?
I'm here.
There you go. There. Hi.
How are you doing?
Well, good. So talk to us about this heat wave that's coming in and what we need to know and how we need to prepare ourselves accordingly.
Yeah, basically, we're just warming a few degrees here each day this week with increasing humidity. It's nothing we haven't seen before. It's not record-breaking heat by any stretch of the imagination. But as you mentioned, we do tend to get humid around here when we get hot and we get flow from the south. And we're looking at temperatures probably warmest on Thursday, probably making it into the low 90s with our dew points, say a low to mid 70s, which will make it feel like it's 100 to 105 degrees or in the peak heat of the afternoon.
So what you said that's not record breaking. What is the record?
Actually, for Thursday, which would be the 11th, the record is 98. That goes all the way back to 1941. And most of our records this time of year are upper 90s. There's a few hundreds, 101 scattered in there. But, probably a good, 6, 7, 8 degrees warmer than what we're expecting for Thursday.
And so is this in any way a precursor to what we might see in the fall or the winter? Or is this pretty normal for right now?
It's actually pretty normal for right now. The late July, early August are typically our warmest times of the year here in the Midwest. And, certainly spells of temperatures into the low 90s are not uncommon.
If you had to put money on it, though, what kind of fall and winter are we going to have?
Well, most of the climate data suggests that we'll be heading into perhaps a cooler winter than we had last year. But it certainly seems like our warm trend may continue, at least into the early fall.
Yes, those are my favorite when it's still kind of warm in the fall. Because, as I said right before we had you on the phone, I grew up in Texas, and so I'm wired for the hot weather. So people, I kind of scoff at people losing their minds over very hot weather all winter, but then they lose their minds at me, getting the parka out by September.
It really is all what you're accustomed to, and then the body really does acclimate to the temperature conditions.
I don't know that mine does, because I've been here for 17 years, and it hasn't acclimated yet. And I still, by January, I'm like, I'm still with the electric blanket until March. No, I can't do it.
Yeah.
I can't. So what do people need to do to prepare for this kind of heat? I mean, we know, don't put your pets in the car without air circulating, and check on elderly neighbors. But what else beyond that?
Yeah, really the main thing is to just take it easy, to try to keep yourself cool. Don't work too hard or too long outside. It's important to hydrate. As you sweat, you tend to lose a lot of your body's cooling ability. Also, you tend to lose some of the minerals in your bloodstream, and you can get out of whack, you know, kind of feeling lightheaded or not feeling well very easily in these kind of conditions. So that's the main thing, is just appreciate that if you're working outdoors, it's going to be tougher, and you're going to be able to do less and have to take more frequent breaks and get somewhere and cool off once in a while.
My friends, a meteorologist at the National Weather Service has just said to do nothing, to do as little as possible.
In fact,
don't work too hard were the exact words. Craig, did you hear that?
I heard those exact words.
It is entered on the record.
Yeah.
Don't work too
hard.
Be
as lazy as possible.
Slack, slack, and more slack.
When does it stop being this ridiculously hot, Mark? Is this a super hot summer, and why is it so mean?
It is warmer than average, and as we expected it to be with a strong La Nina that was, you know, water temperatures in the eastern Pacific Ocean, you know, kind of set up the large-scale circulation of the jet stream going into the summer here. So it's warmer than average a little bit, as we expected, but we'll see some relief from this here in the short term pretty quickly. We actually have a cold front that'll be moving slowly across the area here Friday. And by the weekend, it looks like we'll be back into more of a typical or slightly even cooler than normal, some low 80s for highs with upper 70s along the lake with onshore winds.
I don't know if I'm ready for that. If you could, like, do some weather magic and make it stall a little bit longer.
You like the heat.
I do. I really do, because here's the thing. What is great about Chicago is that because we know the cruel winter ahead of us, we live in the summer like it is our last day on earth. And people go outside. As soon as it's even warm enough to not get frostbite, people are sitting outside on patios in restaurants. And I love that about Chicago, because we have this wonderful hedonist way, this wonderful carpe diem about us in the summer, in the spring, summer, and early fall that I love. And I love that, and I embrace it, and I hate to see it go, because then everyone gets grumpy.
Well, I do, too. I like the warm weather, and of course, the thing is, our springs tend to be a little bit more winter-like than spring-like around here, and a lot of that is due to Lake Michigan being so cold. You know, you warm up on a day in the springtime, and you get the lake breeze to push in, and, you know, cools off to 45 degrees all of a sudden. It's not real pleasant.
True.
But, you know, the spring, or the fall, rather, you know, you have just the opposite. The lake sitting out there at, you know, surface temperatures in the mid-70s or even upper 70s in some spots right now. So as you head into the fall, you tend to have a lot more nicer days, you know, lower humidity, but still relatively mild.
Yeah, we do all right in the fall here.
You know, you guys make great points, and you don't, like, dig out of leaves ever. You're always just digging out of snow in the winter, but it's not like anything happens in the summer where you have to dig your car out for an hour or anything like that.
You just have to let it cool.
Right.
Before you touch the steering wheel.
Right. Or wear gloves.
All those things. Well, I thank you very much, Mark Ratzer, meteorologist and National Weather Service, for being with us and warning us of what's ahead, both the heat wave and the cool front right behind it. Thanks for being with us tonight, Mark.
Yeah, you're welcome. Have a good night.
All right, you too. So there you have it. It's coming. But then we got the little cool front behind it. I don't know if you could see my face right then when he said that, Craig, but I was like, oh. I made like a sad face. Like, I don't want the...
You didn't want that at all.
I love that super hot weather. I go out on my balcony and I do yoga in the mornings, and I think summer mornings when it's very hot and humid first thing in the morning, that's so lovely.
You love super hot and humid morning. What about summer nights? I really like summer nights. Yeah.
I love all the things about summer. All the things
about
summer.
Not the middle of the day. Not 11 o'clock.
I like my shirts without sleeves.
Okay.
I like my mornings to be full of humidity, mm-hmm. and yoga. And all of those things. And I like the evenings when you can sit on a patio and chill with people you like, and it's all good.
I think waking up and doing yoga in like sub-zero weather might be nice. You might enjoy that.
Nope.
Nope?
Nope.
There might be a little bit of, you know, it's really cold and the muscles are relaxed or something.
Nope. I don't think my muscles relax in sub-zero. I think they quickly contract and I get into a ball and I get crabby.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the thing about me.
That is true. We're crabbier in the winter.
People are, mm-hmm. because when spring hits, you can see it on people's faces, and it is noticeable. I have sat in this studio and watched it I have sat when I'm doing the business lunch on Saturdays, I have watched people walk by those first couple of warm days. People are out like they got lucky the night before, and everybody's like, yeah, like they're all doing the walk of shame, and everybody's so excited to be outside in their sunshine and they're not totally bundled, and you can just see it on people.
What are your thoughts about flip-flops?
What do you mean?
How do you feel about them? Because I really like rocking flip-flops right when it first gets warm enough for those. But some people have very negative feelings about flip-flops.
I don't have strong feelings about it. I mean, again,
neither way.
Yoga. So I wear them in and out of my yoga place, my yoga studio.
Some people seem to judge those, especially when you rock them at inappropriate times.
Yeah, it's all about appropriateness. I judge Crocs a lot more than flip-flops.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I
do. Why is that?
Well, because I think they look like chef and surgeon shoes. And if you're not a chef or a surgeon, I mean, I've never worn them, but I understand from other people that they're extremely comfortable. Mm-hmm. And they make accessories so you can decorate your Crocs like pieces of flair. I understand that that is a thing that people do.
Wow.
No, that's real. Have
that
you seen those?
I've never seen flared out Crocs.
Because you know how they have like holes in them, like the little holes on top. Apparently there's these little things you like punch in there. It's almost like the buttons that come with a tuck shirt. They look like those.
Is it feeling comfortable walking around with a bunch of like
Again,
pins in your feet?
Never worn the Crocs. I don't know. But it's like a flat. I've seen the buttons before because one popped off a woman's shoe on Michigan Avenue. And I was like, oh, I think you dropped an earring. She goes, no, it's my Croc flare. And I'm like, well, I don't know what that means.
Well, that woman sounds terrible, to be fair.
She was a sweet little lady.
All right.
And she had her Crocs all done up. And she explained to me that like she buys Croc flare for where she goes on her trips.
Sure.
And it was a thing. And I was like, I've just like stared at your feet for a long time. I'm going to go.
I need to stop doing this now.
Yeah. So that was the thing. Anyway, holy moly, we're a little bit late. So I'm going to take a break, and then we're going to get you to news and all that good stuff back in just a bit on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. We're so busy dancing. At some point, we have to talk because we're just sitting here rocking out all the good songs tonight. Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez. Thanks for staying up late and hanging out with us tonight. We have so much to do on this show. So much to do tonight. So many things to talk about because there are so many things happening in the world. A little bit later in the show, we're going to talk to our good friend Rex Hupke about the latest in the election cycle because that is a gift that keeps on giving like, whoa. And we're going to be talking with an actual practitioner of acupuncture and traditional Chinese medicine about the cupping marks that are all over the Olympic athletes right now and why that matters and what that means and what it does and all that good stuff. So we're going to hear from her in just a little bit. But you know what? Right now, before that, I would like to talk about a really not great holiday. It's not the kind that you wish like happy anything for because it's we did it to ourselves. It is called Earth Overshoot Day, which is about as merry as equal pay day. It's another unfortunate reality that we've done to ourselves. And it is essentially, it is the point when we have used up the resources that we need to live sustainably for a year. So in other words, if there are here's this unit of resources that needs to last 365 days. Nope, we only made it to August the 8th. So we have just passed Earth Overshoot Day. And here to discuss that with us, we are talking with Kelsey Kennedy. She is in the graduate program at NYU's Science, Health, and Environmental Reporting Program, which is a very interesting program in and of itself. We should ask her about that. Welcome to the program, Kelsey.
Hi, thanks for having me, Amy.
Thanks for staying up late with us. So this is not a particularly pleasant holiday, and we're doing it to ourselves. So tell us more about this holiday and who has created it and all of that good stuff.
Yeah, so basically, let's say that the Earth has a kind of like a resource maximum, right? Like if we wanted to budget everything out so we could live sustainably and within our means, then we would use resources at a certain rate. But we are overspending, basically. So we're using our resources at a faster rate than they can be replenished, than they can be relied upon sustainably. So some countries, like the United States, are contributing to this a bit more. We're pushing us toward a higher deficit, while other countries that use resources less intensively are kind of not putting us toward that deficit.
So there is a, you wrote a story about this on Quartz. Everybody head to quartz.com or qz.com and check this out, because there's a really interesting graphic on there that sort of breaks it down by country. Yeah, we're right up there. Looks like US and Australia, we're neck and neck to keep this little checking account overdrawn here in the resources department.
Yeah, so if everybody on the planet lived just like we do here in the United States, then we would need about 4.8 Earths to support that,
wow,
that lifestyle, which is a little crazy.
Really?
Australia has us beat at 5.4 Earths, but India, for example, only would require 0.7 Earths.
Way to go, India. Good job there, India. So what is it that, what is Australia doing that is, what particular factors are contributing to that rate that they have us, that edge that they have on us?
Yeah, so there are a number of factors that contribute to this concept of biocapacity, or like the amount of resources available. And some of those things have to do with energy generation and whatnot. So I would say probably in Australia, climate is a factor. I would say that importing of goods is a factor, and a lack of certain natural resources too in Australia would also lead to that. So they're relying on importing a lot of their resource needs.
Uh-huh.
But also they're a country that has a Western lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
So they eat meat, they use a lot of energy to light buildings and everything, and they love cars, and so these are all elements that contribute as well.
And so all this is organized by the Global Footprint Network, which you can read all about in this story on Quartz. And their recommendation is they encourage people to eat more vegetarian meals, shrink their energy use, reduce their paper waste, just to kind of help it. But there's an interesting thing that you note in this story, and that is we're getting worse at this as we go. So the first time this was measured in October 2006.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first Earth Overshoot Day. So 10 years ago, we made it to October. Now here we are at, you know, we can't get past August 8th. Last year, it was August 13th. The year before that, it was August 19th. So we are getting, it will only be a matter of time before we're into July here.
Yeah. It's not looking good. And you know, that's a pretty rapid change over the course of just 10 years. So that shows that as more and more people have higher quality of living around the world, but also as we, say, here in the United States, get more intensive with our energy use, say, that we're going to kind of keep creeping back on the calendar, unfortunately.
Right. So what do we do in addition to the things that that Global Footprint Network recommends that we just described? What else should we be doing to try to move this back a little bit closer to New Year's Eve and try to actually get 365 days out of the 365 days of resources?
Yeah, so there are a lot of things. Another thing that the Global Footprint Network recommends is to pick a day to telecommute or take alternative transportation. And that's becoming a trend that a lot of companies are encouraging is employees to either work from home and telecommute, or to take public transportation or bike to work. But other than like individual efforts, if we want to make changes at a national or international level, we need to be doing more things like the 2015 Paris Agreement. We need to be shrinking our carbon footprint and reducing emissions. We need to be a lot more careful in our resource use, and we need to make sure that, for example, deforestation decreases.
Definitely. And, you know, the thing is, I hear a lot of people when they talk about the environment, they go to immediately to, well, I recycle, I do my part. I am continually amazed by how much packaging is on products that we order. I mean, like order something from Amazon and you've got a box in a box with a bunch of plastic and then more plastic around that. And then all, it just seems so wasteful. And I feel like for as much as we take ourselves maybe to task with our own curbside recycling or in a special dumpster bin, if you live in a city, I don't know that we're holding companies to quite the same standards or transparency of recycling and environmental responsibility that we are private citizens.
Yeah. So, I mean, the kind of the saying that you vote with your dollar is kind of true from an economic standpoint. So definitely being conscientious of companies that make an effort to use less plastic in their packaging or maybe not ordering from Amazon mm-hmm. all that often. Because on top of all of the boxes and the plastic cushioning inside and everything, there was fossil fuels put into getting that to your door. And as you know, I love my Prime subscription, but either consolidating those shipments as much as you can, or just walking to a nearby store in order to pick something up instead of ordering it. Those are also little things we can do.
Yeah.
Outside the box solution. I don't know if Kelsey would say that this is a good idea, but are you advocating at all going to Mars, getting on that trip and just getting out?
I've had a friend of mine really push for that. And I have to say that it's quite the uphill battle with Mars. We don't have an atmosphere to work with or water.
Right. Okay.
And also, I would say there are probably some equity issues that come up in terms of getting everybody there. So.
Yes, a little bit of class stuff comes up when you talk about people who can go to Mars. Yeah, definitely. Also, no on Mars, because you know why? We can't be trusted with one planet. Let's not have two. Why go wreck another? Let's keep all of our evil planet wrecking ways confined to one planet, because we're doing a fine job wrecking that one. Yeah. We don't need to go do that where we don't even have atmosphere. Come on, Craig. Craig.
I'm sorry. I was just throwing it out there, really feeling it out. And I was planning on like hiding in the luggage, by the way. I wouldn't pay for that.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Because only very few people can. Well, so do you know, Kelsey, do you know of a resource where people can help discern a little bit and be a little more responsible consumer? Is there a database of, I know the, the EWG, you can look up like skincare, the Environmental Working Group. You can look up like skincare toxicity and their labor practices and they kind of get a rating. Is there something like that? Is there a database like that for packaging or for environmental practices or something like that connected to products?
I can't think of the names off the top of my head, unfortunately, but there are a few apps, like for iPhone, that you can scan the barcodes on products at, say, Target, and it will tell you about the environmental kind of history of the product. And I believe it's similar to the Environmental Working Group. They might even be the ones behind it. But really, I think that, I wish that I had a better answer for that. But I think that if people can also just maybe think about, like, does this seem like too much packaging before they make a purchase? That's a huge step forward in and of itself.
And also, I think, gosh, just avoiding plastic. I know that's a big decision maker for me. If I'm looking at two products and one is in glass and one is in plastic, I'm probably going to get the glass one.
Yeah, that's a good approach because it's something that's reusable and durable. So that will last you.
And, you know, I had some people on the show who it's like here in Chicago, there's a place called The Plant, and it long ago was part of the meatpacking, infamous meatpacking area of Chicago, and now is a sustainable business incubator. But all the businesses have to work together. All of their byproducts have to help another business in the building. And it's very, very interesting. And everybody should go look this up. It is a really, really neat thing. And I had a bunch of people on the show a few months ago talking about this. And, you know, the thing that kept coming up on that program was like, hey, recycling should be your last resort. Don't just turn and immediately pitch it in the recycling bin. You should try to reuse the crap out of something way before you just recycle it. And that was an interesting shift, because I think we're so programmed at this point to just, you know, like I have two bins in my kitchen. I have the trash one and the recycling one. And I just will, I've used up that bottle and it like wash it out. Boom. It doesn't, I've some, if it's a cool jar, I'll save it. But otherwise, like, nope, goes right in there. Or I try to be minimalist. I'm like, nope, I don't want the crap in my kitchen. I'm just going to throw it right in there. But I got to do better with that.
By the way, the app you might've mentioned, Kelsey, is that Good Guide?
Yes, that's the exact one I was thinking of.
Cool. Good Guide is an app for Android and iPhone, which exactly like she said, you can scan a barcode and it tells you if the business is environmentally friendly.
Like what kind of data will it come back with?
Resources use, environmental impact, the company's transparency, contributing to the environment rating, the impact on consumers, work safety, the effect on the community, can how it contributes to the society rating. There's a bunch of stuff.
I love
you get
it.
A bunch of info.
Give the name one more time, please.
That's Good Guide. The app is just Good Guide, all one word.
Good Guide.
Good Guide.
I love it. I thought you were saying Good Guys.
Yeah. I think they want me to
the,
sound
the
that
pun.
Way.
Nice. Yeah. Excellent. Well, you've given us a lot to think about. Kelsey, thank you so much for being with us. Kelsey Kennedy, she is writing for Quartz. She is in the graduate program at NYU's Science, Health, and Environmental Reporting, doing all kind of cool stuff, and she is keeping us informed about how we're ruining the Earth, and we appreciate her for doing so. So thank you for joining us tonight, Kelsey, and breaking all this down for us, because it is a lot to think about. And well, you know what? Actually, before you go,
yeah,
I think sometimes people read these kind of headlines and go, wow, another thing where, you know, and it's and it kind of rolls off us. But this sounds really like this is a big deal. This is a major deal. This sounds like we should be taking this extremely seriously. And there should be warning sirens going off attached to this.
Yeah, I think that people get a little desensitized with all of the headlines about, you know, how we're polluting X amount and climate talks and everything else. But I think that, like, this Earth Overshoot Day, for example, is a really great way to bring it home for people that like, this day of the, you know, Monday was the day that we kind of, you know, we're on credit now. We're borrowing.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, I don't know if there's a better way to kind of cut through that desensitization, but I think finding ways to really bring it home for people and make it real in their own daily lives is really important.
Agreed. And I think giving people things they can do about it, because I think that's part of the overwhelm is like, well, I know this is happening, but what can I do? I recycle. That's good enough. I think we all have to dig in a little bit more. So websites like goodguide.com and all of those, I think that can help us do our part. So here's hoping that next year we can at least move it back a day. So it was August 8th.
Yeah.
Let's just shoot for August the 9th or even that. The trend is so many days. If we could just do August 8th again. That would be on the uptick.
Or like an hour. Can we break it down to an hour and just like get us an hour further?
Anything at this point.
Yeah.
I'm scared for the Earth. All right.
Fingers crossed.
Truly. Kelsey Kennedy, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Everybody, head to Quartz. Read this story. It is really interesting. And again, there's a really interesting graphic on there that Global Footprint Network put together that breaks it down by country that is really fascinating. And I think when you see it, how many Earths we would need to live the way Australia does versus the way Brazil does, it's really quite stark. So go do that. We're going to go to break, give you time to Google. We'll be back in just a bit to continue. I'm going to even say that. I'm all tongue-tied. To continue all this fun here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez. And you know, the songs you're playing tonight, Craig, are so delightful that I just want to rock out for a minute. And I'm not like coming.
That's okay. That's
I'm not coming back from break in a timely fashion. I'm going to get in trouble for that.
No, it's fine. On this show, dancing is certainly encouraged.
Because that's a good jam.
Yeah, it is.
David Byrne. Oh, man, that's a good jam right there. Good jam. He's like, I love that guy because he's just weird and so into his art and like weird in the best way.
Yeah.
And all things Talking Heads are winning things.
Mm-hmm. Those artists are some of the best artists, the ones that are so comfortable being
just,
really out
just
there.
Just you do you. Mm-hmm. Like that kind of, like, that's
I'll
why I like David Lynch as a director. Like,
yeah.
Just you do you. Go do your thing. I'm going to get it 90% of the time. Sometimes I
right?
won't, but do it. Go.
Even when
and
it misses,
great.
Though, it's sort of like the perfect train wreck. So even that is kind of fun.
David Lynch doesn't miss.
No?
No.
Okay.
Take that back. You take that back.
Right I
now.
Take that back immediately.
Because he can hear you. He has ears everywhere.
I know he does. I didn't mean him specifically.
All
I
right,
meant,
good.
You know, people like him.
You know, here in a bit, we are going to be talking with an actual practitioner of acupuncture and traditional Chinese medicine. And I can vouch for her mad skills. And we're going to talk about cupping because these Olympic athletes have these marks on them and people are going, what in the heck is that? And I was like, guys, that's cupping. It's great. It's great. So we're going to talk about that here in just a little bit. We're going to be talking with her. And then after that, we're going to talk with Rex Hupke, our good friend, about all the things happening election wise here in the world. But I'm still a little bit freaked out about the Earth thing we're talking
yeah.
about.
Yeah.
Craig.
That's scary.
I mean... That's the problem, is because we're desensitized to everything because we're bombarded. There's so much information to take in a given day, and we're so bombarded, and we look at our Twitter feeds, and we look at, you know, every little noise our phone makes is a new thing that has our attention, and it's hard to just be attached to one thing. But you guys, we really got to get it together with this Earth situation because we are screwing it up.
Right. We're screwing. Have you... Science seems angry recently. Have you seen that, like, flossing doesn't do anything? Did you see that study?
I did see that.
That it's completely unbeneficial and anyone who's been doing it is wasting their time? There was a study and that's pretty much what it said.
I used to have... My childhood dentist used to say, just floss the teeth you want to keep. Which I always liked.
Are they mean about it? My dentist is always mean if he feels like I haven't been flossing.
No,
there's
I'm pretty sure the guy who was my dentist, I'm pretty sure he was drunk most of the time.
Oh,
like
okay.
Looking back on it, I'm pretty sure he was half in the bag.
Was he good?
I mean, I got all my teeth.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So whatever.
That's talented.
I mean.
To be honest, that job seems hard and to do it drunk seems just extra hard.
I let that man. I mean, he's filled a cavity.
Wow. Has drunk. He ever removed a tooth?
No, I've never had a tooth pulled.
That's good.
I mean, I had my wisdom teeth as an adult, but right. That was different.
You're sure it was the wisdom teeth?
That wasn't him. That was, I had moved to a different dentist by then. And it was, that was like, long story, TMI, no one wants to know about. But essentially, that's when I realized I was allergic to pain medication because I woke up in an ER and I still had my wisdom teeth. It was bad. It was a bad scene. Ugh. Anyway, do you have your wisdom teeth, Craig?
Actually, I just got them taken out. That literally just happened. I'm getting a phone call.
All right. That's fine.
I don't have mine.
You don't? Well, because, right, mostly we get, mostly you get them taken out.
You get them taken out.
I just had them taken out.
How did you go that long?
I was going to say, Craig, you seem slightly less wise, my friend.
Yeah, well, thank you. I feel slightly less wise.
How did you manage
I guess to I got a cavity in one of the four of them.
So they came in completely straight. They weren't impacted.
Yeah, they weren't impacted. They were fine. But I saw a dentist recently and he said one of the four had a cavity. So why not just pull them? Apparently that was the choice and pull them all.
Were you tripping out when you...
Yes. Yeah. I actually did it awake. I didn't get knocked out completely. Yeah. So I got to feel the tooth crack. And that, my friends, is the worst thing ever. It's terrible. And then actually, when they do more than one, you're just really hoping for them to crack after the first one. Because once you know what it sounds and feels like, you just want it to happen as quickly as possible.
You're going to have to do the rest of the show. I'm so creeped out right now.
Yeah, it's awful.
That's like nails on a chalkboard to me. I can't.
You just told the Brian Regan bit, the four wisdom teeth.
Uh-huh.
Brian Regan. Yeah, you just told the four wisdom teeth story. yours outshines anyone else.
Oh, thank you.
I am legitimately creeped out.
Right.
Now, I'm stressed about the Earth because
the
conversation we just had with our new friend Kelsey.
Right.
And now I'm really legitimately creeped out about wisdom teeth issues.
I had a student dentist, too.
No.
It happened.
You're making this worse. You're not making this better. You're making this significantly worse. The only thing that would be worse is if like a flu shot or some needle was involved and I can't. Mm-mm.
Just had this happen this week?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right.
With the no. All the nope. Hail to the nope to you, my friend. Okay, so we're going to take a break. We're going to get you to news. And when we come back, we're talking about cupping because we've seen all these marks on the Olympians. And these are like superhumans. And so if they're doing it, it makes sense the rest of us should be doing it too. So we're going to be talking about that with someone who is an expert in it. So we'll be back in just a bit on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez. Thanks for being with us tonight and sharing part of your evening with us. We're awful glad that you are. My friends, you know, a lot of people have been posting pictures online and saying, what in the hell is that on Michael Phelps' shoulder? And all these other athletes and people are noticing these big red marks about the size of a tennis ball. Well, it is cupping. And so a lot of people are going, what is that? Sounds kind of woo-woo. I don't know if it's for me, but look, I feel like if elite athletes, these like fine physical specimens of human beings can do it, then it's something we should all pay attention to. And in fact, I have. It is something that I have done and that I think is really interesting and that I like. I have had good result. And so I thought I would just bring in one who knows all about it. And that is the woman who has performed cupping on me, Jennifer Dubowski. She's a licensed acupuncturist. She does traditional Chinese medicine, acupuncture, cupping, all those good things. She is a friend to WGN. She's been on the station before. You know her. You love her. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be here.
Well, thanks for joining us here very late, past your bedtime, I know, but I appreciate you coming in. So a lot of people, I think there's a little bit of misinformation about cupping going on right now. A lot of people are posting to Facebook and going, it's sucking poison out of muscles. And some people are going, it's sucking chlorine out of Michael Phelps muscles. No, it's none of those things.
No.
Tell us just in like simplest form, what is the benefit of cupping? Because I've felt it, but what is really happening in the body?
Do you want me to tell you what the process of cupping is?
Let's
or
start
the
there.
Benefits?
Let's start with process. People who maybe haven't done it.
All right. So the basic concept is you have these cups. They might be glass. They might be plastic. And you create suction. A more traditional way is with fire. But these days, a lot of us have a more modern way called a suction pump, which a lot of people like.
And they look like little bells, like a little clear glass, almost like a bell.
Actually, that's what the plastic ones look like, but I have glass ones that look more like balls. So it depends on the cup. There's even bamboo ones, which look literally like jars.
Okay.
So depends on where you're going.
They almost look like the stemless wine glass.
But
they're little.
Yes. Well, actually, they come in different sizes.
Oh, well, there you go. To accomplish different things?
Well, not only different things, but different parts of the body. So, for example, if I'm working on someone's elbow, I have a lot less flesh to cover than if I'm working on someone's tush.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Right.
Okay.
Okay.
So what it does is it encourages suction. So think of it like an inverse of a massage. A massage, you are pressing down into the muscle fibers, whereas with cupping, you are actually sucking up and the skin comes up partially into the cup, and it also brings up the muscle fibers, old blood that's stuck in there. For example, athletes, lactic acid builds up. And yes, there are toxins because if we pollute our body with a lot of crap, it's stuck in our body fluids. But I would think for athletes, it has more to do with getting the blood flow because not only does it pull up old blood, it encourages fresh blood flow and enhances circulation. So that would be how it is done. And then also, it's not even just the suction. When you release the cup, there is then a flush. And a really easy way, an analogy I like, is if you take a garden hose, and you just decide, whatever, I'm going to just squeeze this garden hose really tight. And you hold it, you hold it, you hold it. When you let it go, it goes psh.
Like tons of water.
Right. Goes right through. Plus, if you think about it, if there's gunk in the middle of the hose, when it goes through faster, it can carry it out.
Aha. Uh-huh. Right.
And when you bring up the old blood, lactic acid, toxins, whatever's accumulated to the surface, it can then flush out of the body.
So you're lifting the whole subcutaneous layer up.
Yes.
Creating a little more room for that blood to get moving.
Exactly. Right. It's creating space for new blood to come in and for the old blood and other things that are gunking up the works. We call it stagnation and getting things moving.
And so it seems like athletes have I feel like athletes have done this for a while, but right now we're talking about it so much, probably because social media and we have a lot pictures than ever.
And Michael Phelps, he, you know, looks great in a bathing suit.
Sure.
And he's got a lot of cupping marks.
And a lot of people are like to tweet pictures of him in his Speedo.
Yes, they do.
And so if you were at the Olympics right now, would you be how often would you get cupping if you were an athlete?
You know, it really depends on their situation. When I am working with athletes, because especially in a situation like the Olympics, but I've worked with marathon runners, people who are like on the verge of, we got to go. I kind of think of that as, you're going to really put it to the hilt. I might not work them so hard if it was regular treatments, mm-hmm. but if they are really going through rigorous stuff, they're in pain, they need pain relief, I might even do it a few times a week.
Yeah.
Now, normally, with most patients, the ideal way I like to do it is you do some cupping, you wait till the marks fade a little bit. Also, cupping is diagnostic, so that you will actually get darker in different spots where things are more stagnant. And as it fades, what I kind of like to do is then on the next cupping session, you see what's left and you go after nearby spots, because usually there's more congestion around there. So with regular patients, I probably wouldn't do it as often. But if I've got an athlete or somebody who's got to be on point, we might do it more often depending on how he feels. But you don't want to do it too much because you might increase the soreness and they need to be ready.
Yeah. And I mean, my experience with it was for muscle soreness, and it made crazy marks.
Yes.
On me. It like bruised like crazy. And it really looked like I had been beaten with tennis balls at the end of it.
I like to say it looks like you got a hickey from an octopus.
A giant, like ginormous
Numerous.
Kraken of
right.
an, like huge creature. But it was like about tennis ball size. That would maybe a little smaller.
Yes.
And they were, but indeed, like where the muscles were sorer is where the bruises were darker.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And another spot that I really often cup, and the longer I've been doing it, the more I cup, is I cup near the lymph nodes. So kind of near the armpits on the mm-hmm. back, because the lymph is what carries, for lack of a better medical term, the garbage in our system out.
Right.
Okay. And one thing I have really noticed over the years is how many people, whether they have pain there or not, are much darker in that area. And I think it's because the lymph and other things get stuck and gathers, and it's a great way to get it out.
So we could even be looking at athletes in their cupping marks and saying, okay, this person has darker bruising here. Maybe they're that's a weak spot, or maybe that will...
Well,
it would be interesting to like analyze their performance versus where they're bruising darker.
Well, clearly with Michael Phelps, I would say he's got a shoulder issue.
Okay.
Because if you look at his cupping, it's mainly upper back, and he's got one big dark one right on his deltoid.
Mm-hmm.
So this would just be my guess, that he's got something going on with his shoulder, and that would make sense with a swimmer.
So if anyone's like playing Vegas odds, you might want to talk to people into cupping, because they can read the cupping marks. And
right,
they can help.
Right. I liked reading faces better. But yeah, no, cupping, it also is a bit telltale too, because some, it doesn't happen often, but you know, some people, they really either believe or just like to tell people they live very healthy lives.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing you will see is like if, you know, you're putting a lot of bad things into your body, be it foods, drugs, alcohol, those people often will also have darker marks. And those are the people too that most people, usually by the third or fourth session, you're not getting as much color because you've pulled stuff out. But sometimes with those people, if they keep polluting their bodies, it's going to take a lot longer.
Interesting.
So it is interesting, and it belies sometimes what patients tell you.
Sure. They're like, no, clean living.
Oh,
not
yeah.
so much.
No. And then I see their back, and I'm like, ooh,
oh, really?
I don't think so.
How? That's very interesting. Like, see, the body doesn't lie.
No.
It never does in any setting ever. And so do you see other athletes? It's probably just something like people aren't looking for, but do you see other athletes? Do you ever notice them on other athletes, or did you notice this in the last Olympics?
Oh, yes.
Really?
Oh, I actually am not a huge athletic fan, but I pay attention to all the athletes out there who are getting acupuncture and or cupping. And then I try to write about it on my blog. And for example, I just was taking a peek at some of my older articles. In the 2008 Olympics, there's a swimmer name, and I'm so sorry if I ruin her name, but the first name is Wang, and then it's Q-U-N. Not mm-hmm. sure how to pronounce it. But she was a Chinese swimmer, and you probably have already, they reposted her photo actually this year because she had cupping marks all over her back. Mm. So she made headlines for that as well. Also, the Mets have really been using it as a team. One team member started using it last year, and people kind of made fun of him. And now the joke is that you walk in the locker room and everybody's got marks.
Interesting.
Yes. So definitely it's not a new thing. I just think Michael Phelps has maybe made it a little sexier and sure. prevalent.
By right. the way, we are doing a public service. We're getting a lot of texts. 60. This is Jerry. So glad you've explained this to me. I thought poor Michael Phelps was getting beat up. from the 312, I definitely thought Michael Phelps was getting beat up by that other guy that keeps staring at him.
Well,
so a lot of people.
Excellent. I'm so glad people realize actually he was being helped.
Yeah, he was doing a healthy thing for himself. And you mentioned your blog. Where can people go to read your blog?
They can go to my website at tcm007.com. Just go to the blog. So blog. TCM007.
And I'll be sure and tweet a link out to it later.
Okay.
So if anyone wants to follow me on Twitter, we'll be sure and put a link up and we'll put it on the show page once we post the podcast.
Perfect.
We have so much more to talk about with cupping and athletes and all this because it is a topic I'm so interested in. When athletes go to, I think we think of like sports medicine as being very Western, very by the book. And I really like it. I love to see athletes doing things like acupuncture and cupping and all that and to, you know, take care of themselves using a lot of different modalities. So still lots to talk about. We're going to take a little break, come right back and continue this conversation with Jennifer Dubowski, licensed acupuncturist, into cupping, all the things, knows all the things about all the things, dispelling myths left and right here. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. It's so darn official sounding. 720 WGN, Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez. We're holding our heads high, listening to Olympic anthems, because that's what we do this time of year. But, you know, my friends, a lot of people, there's a lot of interesting stories swirling around the Olympics this year. Saturday night, 7 to 9 on the Saturday night special, I'm going to devote the whole show to talking about the Olympics because there are so many interesting stories. I will have someone from Huffington Post on. We're going to be talking a lot about a lot of different aspects, including how a medal winner was identified by how her husband, how she was married to a Bears player, not say that she was the Met. Never mind. That was a whole thing that happened. And then how there's a swimmer. There was a swimmer who was like her husband, who was her coach. He was praised more. And yeah, all these things. Yeah, it said wife of Chicago Bears player wins a medal.
Lovely.
It has been corrected, but nonetheless, that's where it went. So we're going to be talking about all those things. But one of the things that is a really interesting story that's come out of the Olympics is cupping. And that's these marks we're seeing all over athletes. Michael Phelps has these big tennis ball size marks on his shoulder. And people have been talking about what on earth that is. Or is he getting beaten up? Do we need to do an intervention for him? I knew what it was right away because I have done this. It is called cupping, and it is a really, really interesting thing. So who better to discuss this than an expert in cupping, Jennifer Dubowski, licensed acupuncturist, expertise in all things related to this. And I have experienced cupping from her, so I can vouch for this. From some muscle soreness, she put these on. I bruised like crazy, but nonetheless, I did feel a lot better. And after two or three times, like I think twice maybe we did it.
Actually, I think we did it three times. I would have to go back and check.
Sure.
But I generally like to ideally get three in eventually because I feel like the third one kind of gets the final bits out.
Then it was three for sure. Because I remember whatever the last time was, I was like, I barely even bruised.
Exactly.
I'm doing some good living. Yeah.
That's right.
So we talked in the last segment a little bit about how it works, how the mechanics of it work, and what happens in the body when you kind of lift that subcutaneous layer and let all this blood start to flow freshly into muscles and how it kind of lifts that lactic acid out for athletes. But I wonder if you could talk to us a little bit, if we could just rewind a little bit, like where does cupping come from and how long has it been around and all of that good stuff?
Well, actually, the history of cupping is super interesting because it is not just based in China. It's based all over the world. As a matter of fact, the ancient Egyptians used it. The ancient Greeks used it. It was also used in other parts of Asia as well as Europe. And in North America, it was used by the natives and even went by the name the horn method because they would take, I think it was buffalo horns, but hey, maybe it was another type
whatever
of horn.
Whatever horn is sitting around.
Exactly. They would cut off the top, stuff it with grass, light it on fire to create suction, and then go right ahead and cup people.
Wow.
So it has been around a long time. Actually, the first documentation of cupping was 3,000 years ago, and that was for pulmonary tuberculosis.
Wow.
And one other historical fact that I quite like is that Hippocrates, who is often called the father of modern medicine,
certainly
recommended cupping, and wait, I wrote this down, in his book, The Guide to Clinical Treatment, and he recommended it for menstrual difficulties, angina, and other disorders.
Wow. So going in the Wayback Machine,
oh,
it's long
yes.
been recognized.
It has been around forever.
Interesting.
In many cultures.
And so let's talk about the benefits. We talked a little bit about how it works and that and kind of hinted at the benefits. But just for both for athletes and for just regular people, mm-hmm. what can someone expect to experience if they're new to cupping, let's say?
Okay. Well, first off, I mean, I know that in my practice, if someone is very new to cupping, I always start smaller because I want to make sure...
It's not terrifying.
Right. It's not terrifying. I don't want them to get too sore. I want to make sure it all works out and I see how they react to it. So depending on how long your cups are on, what type of cupping, it can definitely make a difference in your experience. But some of the common benefits will include definitely increased circulation, often just a general sense of well-being. I would say a lot of people find it decreases anxiety. Hmm. It helps tension. It relieves pain. It's really quite good for musculoskeletal pain. It helps relieve soreness and stiffness. Clearly, all of those would be great for athletes. As well, I think I already mentioned anxiety, but it's good for migraines, arthritis, injury recovery, workout recovery, just general aches and pains. And a lot of those would apply to athletes, mm-hmm. especially those who are working out really hard for the Olympics.
Sure. You would have muscle soreness. You would have
all kinds of things. Pain, injuries all the time.
Probably joint stuff and all these, you know,
exactly.
lots of tears and stuff that just happens to the body from training that hard. I remember the first time when you did cupping on me, I was hyper. For hours, I felt...
Afterward.
Yeah, I felt very hyper.
See, now that's really interesting, and I think this is just because you're a special person.
Could be.
But a lot of people actually feel very zoned out and calm.
Mm.
And even myself, I know the way I equate it sometimes when I get cupping is I almost feel like someone pops a balloon, and I kind of go...
yeah.
But... I can see where you had that reaction because cupping really gets things moving.
Yeah.
And if you have been tense or if you've been in pain, it's like your whole back feels all loosey-goosey.
Yeah.
And it can definitely kind of pep you up.
Sure.
So and it depends on the person.
And then I slept like the dead. But for like an hour, I was like, yay, I'm going to go do all the things. Bonk. And then I was out like
right.
a light. We are starting to run out of time, but we have a caller. I want to take this caller. Hi, Joe. You have a question about cupping?
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, when I was on hold, I got a very, very thorough, complete explanation of its derivation and the benefits. But I'd like a second part of my question still addressed, if you would. When I first saw it, I had no idea what it was on Phelps's back. And I said, well, if they're putting suction in some sort of a vehicle, whatever, at the skin surface, it must be destroying a heck of a lot of capillaries, causing that basically a black and blue mark. Is that, where am I wrong on that?
Well, what I would actually say is I don't think it destroys capillaries, but definitely one of the reasons that you do see some of those purple marks is because it will get the blood rising up and some of the capillaries may open or kind of pop, but it doesn't destroy them. So, you know, it's like when you do get a hickey and you suck the blood to the surface, you get a purple mark.
So they will, they'll regenerate is what you're saying?
Oh, totally.
Okay.
Oh yeah. Those marks fade. I mean, it depends on the patient and how difficult the problem is, but usually the marks will fade within a week or so.
And the capillaries have regenerated.
Everything has regenerated. Hmm. It often feels really good.
Interesting.
So what function of the body allows the capillaries to be rebuilt, restructured?
Well, the human body is always repairing itself. Whenever you have an injury, like with muscles, with tears, with all of it, it's always regenerating itself.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be true of capillaries and other parts.
Thanks very much for the call, Joe. Have a great night.
Thank you.
Well, there you go. So we are helping dispel myths that poor Michael Phelps is not getting beaten up. He's actually living quite well and making healthy choices for himself. And I super love that that you're able to kind of read his potential injuries a little bit, kind of guess at them, because we're like,
and that one shoulder mark,
yeah, it's really dark.
Really dark, and that's the biggest, most noticeable one.
That's really interesting. So tell us again where people can go to buy your book and to read your blog, follow you on social media, all of those good things.
Okay, awesome. So Jennifer Dubowski, licensed acupuncturist. You can find me at most things TCM007. That's my Twitter handle. And I also have a book called Adventures in Chinese Medicine, Acupuncture, Herbs, and Ancient Ideas for Today. You can find that on Amazon.com, or if you're in Chicago, you can buy it in my office. My website is tcm007.com. You can also find my blog, which I update regularly and have done so for several years.
You guys, the TCM007, it's like, think of James Bond, 007, TCM, traditional Chinese medicine. She's the 007 of that. She's like
exactly.
It's like she's sort of like a ninja.
Right.
For those things.
That's what I love about it.
And yes, she's all over social media. You can find her. You can read her blog. There's always lots of really good information on the blog, all about things like in the news, like cupping. And so thanks for coming in and breaking it down for us.
Well, thank you so much, Amy. It's always a pleasure.
And my friends, again, I will tweet out links to all the things she just mentioned so that you can find them, get your questions answered, buy her book, read her posts, all the good stuff, and give her a visit if you want to try cupping for yourself. All right, my friends, we're going to take a little break, get you to news, all those good things, and be back in just a bit on 720 WGN. Gotta let that one play. That's the part I'm waiting for. 720 WGN, Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez tonight. Thanks for being with us and sharing part of your evening with us, my night owl friends. I am grateful to you for doing so, for choosing us over like playing with your phones, for playing Angry Birds or Pokemon or whatever. By the way, I saw a giant Pokemon, like an actual one. I've never played the Pokemon Go, but like a dude in a Pokemon outfit sprinting over by the fountains in Millennium Park today, like hauling ass, and all these little children were chasing him. It was so spectacular. I was in a taxi and I was like, whoa, slow down. I got to get a picture of that.
That should be Pokemon Go the game. That sounds way better than
playing on
your phone.
It kind of made me want to just like get a Pokemon outfit and just like sprint down Michigan Avenue because it was spectacular. My friends, we have come to the time in the program in which we call our good friend Rex Hupke, because there are so many things to discuss. We can't go very long without talking with him because, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in the world to talk about, and we need to talk about it with Rex. Welcome to the program, Rex Hupke.
Always a pleasure. How are you doing?
Hello. Thanks for staying up late. We appreciate it very much.
Absolutely.
So, let's see. We enjoy talking about politics, and there are many of those things, because that's a topic that keeps on giving right now in our world.
It sure does. Wow. Yeah, today being no exception.
Yeah. So today, I don't even know where to start. So there were some remarks made by Trump, kind of like a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Hey, Second Amendment folks, perhaps we could deal with this Hillary situation if she is elected and appoints judges you don't like. And the implication being that someone would shoot her. And, you know, there were a lot of op-eds written about it and a lot of people. One of them was just kind of like, hey, no matter where you fall on the gun issue, you please take notice of, like, recognize what's wrong with what just happened. Someone who's trying to be a world leader just threatened someone else who's trying to be a world leader, or implied that she should be shot.
Right. Yeah, that was, I would call that unusual. The Secret Service is acknowledging what happened as a thing that they're aware of. You're in highly unusual territory, obviously. It was bizarre. And what was particularly bizarre was that everybody after yesterday, Trump gave an economic speech in Detroit where he read off a teleprompter and actually managed to not say something completely insane for a period of an hour, roughly. But, so everybody's kind of thinking, oh, he's back on track now. So, of course, today out comes this. And to be honest with you, I don't think that he necessarily said this intending to suggest assassination or a specific act of violence, because I think he's just, he just says stuff just falls out of his mouth. I mean, it literally just, he spews nonsense so much. I don't think he actually puts any thought into what he's saying. And so the comment, regardless of his intention or anything, is awful and extremely dangerous. But the fact that I don't think he even realized it is in many ways even more troubling, I think, for him as a presidential candidate, because, you know, when you're, he can sort of do it now, I guess, but if you're president, I mean, you can, you know, market shift and I mean, you cause major global developments and with your words. I mean, it's not, and so that's what really scares the daylights out of me, frankly, is just when you hear him just very cavalier making these comments that are atrocious and scare the pants off people, that is not good.
So you were at the RNC, you were at the Republican convention, and you were walking around, you were talking to a lot of people, and we've talked on the air since then, and you made note of the fact that one-on-one, lots of people were quite civilized and thoughtful about where their heads were at the moment politically, and including people that were very supportive of Trump. So... I mean, at any point, did you see, because what we see online is, a very different story than that. And so where is that disconnect, or was it there, you just weren't around it, or how, break that part down for me.
Well, I think there is a lot of, there's a lot of distrust of the media, which he is feeding right and left all the time. And so I think that there's a, people who do support him, there's a defensiveness. They will, so the Trump campaign's immediate response to today's comments was, oh, no, he's talking about the fact that Second Amendment people will come out and vote, you know, because they really care passionately about this issue, blah, blah, blah. Which, when you look at the words he actually spoke, made no sense. He was clearly talking about, you know, what would happen to Hillary Clinton after she was elected and appointed judges. But regardless, they pushed this narrative out, and his followers are very quick to jump on that and say, no, he just wasn't speaking very articulately about it, but that's what he said. And so I think one of the problems is that the media continues to report on all of the crazy things that he says, but you have a large chunk of people who so distrust the media at this point that they don't believe, which is weird, because in this case, I mean, the video is right there. It's all, I mean, it's all right there. I mean, you can disagree, but it's not like anybody's fabricating what he said or what the reaction from the crowd was or anything like that. So, I think that's one of the problems, is that he caters to this media distrust, and this media distrust, it predates him by a lot and just kind of gets continually worse. And so that allows him to somehow surf over these things that keep developing with just the dramatic, slightly nutso things that he says. So anyway, I think that's at the root of it, is that there's they don't want to believe bad things anyway. And he kind of gives them permission to put the blame on the media instead of on him for saying something ludicrous.
Right. And I think, anytime that comes up, I mean, certainly when it comes up with one of my own relatives, I go, by the way, I'm a member of the media, just so you know, just by the way, if you want to maybe backpedal a little bit. And at no point has a politician ever bribed me to report something any one way or another, just FYI on that. But I also, I always point out, I think this is really important to note, that when we say the media now, we must include social media, because social media has democratized media in such a large way. I say that it has not diminished the role of news organizations, but it has certainly widened the pool and created more places to say more things and given more people voice. So there's a lot out there, but I think it's impossible to say the media without talking about your own contribution to it as a citizen and the things that you put into the world as just, I mean, email forwards. You and I have talked about email forwards many times, Rex, of like these emails that are completely inaccurate or mostly inaccurate, that contain some kind of misinformation. Further, they're usually written in Comic Sans in like 5 different colors of font. There's that.
Yes, absolutely.
And they're like, people are sending them to hundreds of people within their address book. Again, relatives of mine, people that I love and believe are moral and that I believe are intelligent people, send email forwards in Comic Sans in 5 different colors to people saying, you know, and when I will hit reply and say, well, listen, I'm going to have to fact check you as a professional responsibility. This, and this, in fact, did not happen in 2008. This happened here, and this was this. It's immediately like you're putting a liberal agenda. No. I'm just telling. You can send that about either candidate, and I'm going to say the same thing. I feel a professional responsibility to correcting misinformation when it is presented to me.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And you're. I mean, the stuff that's propagated is. Just amazing. Just today, in response to a column I wrote, two different people emailed me exactly what you're talking about. You know, they forwarded an email forward trying to show evidence contradicting what I wrote in the column,
oh
all of
God.
Which was complete garbage. I mean, it was absolutely false. And yet, you know, I'm getting it from multiple different people. So, those types of things have become like factual documents.
Oh.
And I think, I mean, when you think about pre-social media, people didn't get their hands on documents mm-hmm. so much, unless you were sort of an obsessive, conspiracy theorist who
right.
compiled folders of material. So now people get something and they think, okay, this has to be real because, you know, here it is. I'm looking at it. I can print this out. I can send this to. So there's like a tangible, even if it's electronic, a kind of a tangible thing there, which gives it somehow greater credence in it, even if it's completely nonsensical. So,
yeah.
And then, of course, nobody's willing to do the actual Google searches, really, which is usually all it takes to debunk things like that. Nobody's willing to do that to actually back check it. So,
right.
Yeah, it's become a huge problem because you just can't fight people who are convinced that they are right and you're wrong. I mean, there's too much out there now that will allow people to prove themselves right, even if they're completely wrong.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, what I always tell people whenever I get email forwards, I go, okay, so anytime there's a quote, I want you to grab the text of that and just Google it. Just Google it and make sure that's, in fact, what that person said. Because it's may not be. And then if there's a particular date where, and any time in an email forward it says, and it's a fact that XYZ, you need to Google that. Because I feel like fact is one of those things like, or asserting that you have a fact is often one of those things like powerful or beautiful. Like if you need to insist that it probably isn't the case, right? If you need to remind people that you're powerful or good looking, then maybe, no, those are things that speak for themselves sometimes. We've talked about this a lot on the show, and I know you and I have discussed this too, and it's something that with my another hat that I wear at the Op-Ed Project, we talk about a lot. But we talk about the work of George Lakoff, who is a linguist and has written extensively on this idea that of how it is we can't hear each other and how we can totally dismiss facts that are presented to us. And I think all of us, I think his stuff should be required reading because I think it's so interesting how he breaks down the neurological process and the emotional process of building like a framework by which to see the world and support your opinions to the point that in testing, when presented with a fact that doesn't work within your framework, you won't even necessarily remember seeing it, much less agree with it. And I think that's a problem, right? When we think about, and so it's like, it's not even that someone's just being a dumbass. It's that like, we're not even speaking the same language. You know, if you're talking about like the gun debate, like one side is talking about safety and the other one is talking about rights. If you could find a place, like where does this Venn diagram possibly overlap? Then you can have a conversation that's productive. But until then, no, not so much. Not so
right.
much. We're just going to keep yelling at each other.
Yeah, exactly. I think in this, one of the things along those lines that's happening in the campaign here is that everybody on the left is yelling about Trump, which I happen to think is justified because he's such an unusual candidate. But as soon as you say something to a Trump supporter, their first response is, well, but Hillary, blah, blah, blah. So they're, and we see that a lot now, I think. It's hard to sort of accuse someone of something without the immediate response being, oh, yeah, but your person did this, this, and this, and as if that somehow, you know, makes the initial malfeasance not exist anymore or something like that. So,
you know, the one I've heard a lot lately is in conversations, and, I can talk about heavy stuff without losing my mind or being a crazy person or screaming at people. So I like to talk about politics, and I like to talk about religion and spirituality and stuff like that because I think it's interesting. Like the two things that we're all raised to, you know, never bring up, I like to bring up. But I think the thing I've heard a lot lately is people will say some variation of this. Well, I don't like Trump either, but Hillary seems mean, or, you know, the B word or whatever. Like, you know, I'm not asking my president to be my best friend or my neighbor.
Right. Yeah.
And further, what Hillary is criticized for, Trump is, in fact, praised for.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Know? Oh, yeah. There's a huge double standard.
He's billing himself as a complete jerk bomb who is will say the thing and go get the bad guys. And like if Hillary even tiptoes near that, then she's, you know, the B bomb. And Scott Baio is tweeting pictures of her in front of the C bomb. And like
all
of these crazy things are happening. And I'm like, because she's not nice, you're willing to vote for someone who's like making jokes about racism and genocide and shooting her. Like, I'm not adding up. No. In fact, we expect our male presidents to not particularly be nice, but to be aggressive. And if she even shows a little bit of it, no, she's not acceptable.
Oh yeah. Imagine if she had suggested that the Russians hack Trump's email. I mean,
yeah.
My God, cause, I mean, people's heads would have exploded.
Totally.
So, there's absolutely, I mean, what's happening, nobody can figure out right now, because frankly, any of a list of like 20 to 30 things that Trump has said or done over the course of this campaign would have ended any other politician's campaign, like instantly.
Yeah. So
it's not even just today's. I mean, plenty more before this. And yet he keeps going. So it's a very odd thing, and it's kind of I think it's got everybody's head spinning, and has for the past, you know, 6-8 months.
It's true. And so why do you think he's able to get away with it when anyone else would be out?
I think he's tapped into a anger and frustration that was, I look at it kind of like a tank that was getting ready to explode, a aluminum tank that was getting ready to blow. And he hit the relief valve on that, because you have a lot of people who are mad about immigrants, who are mad about, you name it, women, this, that, and the other thing, and have felt correctly like they shouldn't say those things out loud.
Right.
And now all of a sudden here comes somebody that gives them permission to be mad and to say things out loud, and boom goes, I mean, just...
boom goes all kind of dynamite.
So yeah, it's this kind of catharsis among a lot of really white male people.
Well,
women. Some women also. I mean, he does have a... I mean, it's not just white male people, but anyway.
Predominantly, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, he's just like... it's what they've been waiting for.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, why. Because that's a large enough percentage of the population, unfortunately, that it's carried him.
Well, there's the theory, right, that like part of this is based in a certain amount. It's like if one's privilege is threatened, one will act out and lash out against who they perceive as threatening their privilege. And so there was a piece, I think it was, I'm almost positive it was in The Atlantic, that was essentially saying that there was a sense of general safety, and I'm not saying this is what I think or what I don't think, I'm just saying the fact remains this was written about in the damn Atlantic, and it was that there was a sense of of like white privilege, that even if you weren't aware of your white privilege, there was some degree of it. There it was, you had it, and the president always looked a certain way. But suddenly in Grant Park, that changed. And that kind of became, like, the minute Obama was elected, suddenly it started to look different. And the possibility then that the president wasn't always going to look the same became disruptive to people who even subconsciously benefited from some degree of racial or gender privilege. And that's kind of a big complicated thing to unpack and dump into the room and think about. And I think it's even harder to say, yes, I am a white person, and I'm sure I have benefited from my privilege in ways I can't even imagine. I think that's really hard to say and hard to get your head around. And even being willing to say it, I think there's still tons of ways that you and I have benefited that we don't even know, right?
Absolutely.
But I think that's a really, I mean, I read that piece with great interest because I think that's a very interesting point that suddenly, like, if there's a, Because there's a lot of the things being said, or like, make America great again and return to this particular time and do this. And you know, there was recently a New York Times video that it was reporters had just gathered at various Trump events. You know, the one, right? I think I saw it because you shared it on Facebook. And it was so interesting because it was just like crowd shots of people screaming. I mean, at one point, a guy straight up gave a Nazi salute and started screaming Sieg Heil. Like, that gave me chills. And there was people screaming, like, Trump said something about Obama and someone screaming the N-word back at him. And I was like stunned. And I'm like, guys, I'm not down with this definition of America. We started off multicultural, for crying out loud. Like, we showed up and took over land that wasn't even ours. let's tell the real story here. Oh, boy.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And look at a lot of people are not down with this. And that's becoming apparent when you look at the way the poll numbers are starting to shift now.
Yeah. Now, does that make you nervous? I'm a little nervous seeing, like, the polls looked so confident. Like, Nate Silver was like, 92% likely Hillary's got it. And I was like, don't say that, Nate Silver, don't talk, because that means people are going to stay at home. Don't talk. Nobody talk to Nate Silver until after November.
Well, look, I'm out of the prognostication game after having said that he would never get the nomination in the first place. So I don't claim to know what I'm talking about. But, the national polls are meaningless, really, and the polls are going to shift more, I'm sure, going up into the election. And God knows what else is going to come out regarding Hillary and emails and stuff that could cause other problems. But, I mean, there's a certain there's a demographic issue at play here, and there's math involved. And barring just pitiful turnout among certain groups of people, voters and whatnot, or just a staggering turnout among people that support Trump, the numbers it's tough to add up in his favor, let's put it that way. And, but who knows? I mean, it can change a lot. But see, everybody on the Trump side talks about how he's going to turn out incredible numbers of people who've never voted. But the problem is that everything he says also is going to start bringing out higher numbers of, every time he talks about building a wall, you're going to get higher Latino turnout. Mm-hmm. And every time people, start chanting All Lives Matter at his rallies and stuff, I think you boost your African-American turnout as well. And also, other people of all colors who are bothered by, that kind of thinking. So, I tough to call, but it's a steep climb. But what I think you're seeing now, at least, is like the way he's tanked since his attack against the Khan family, the Gold Star family. I think you're seeing people say, wait a minute, we're better than this. I mean, and I'm not, I say none of this as a resounding endorsement for Hillary Clinton. I'm just talking about him specifically. I think people are going, oh boy.
I think we all watched that, no matter where you fall politically. Like, everyone saw grieving parents on stage that night. It was heartbreaking and tough, and for him to be so callous about that was just like, really? Really? You would kick a puppy, dude. I mean, really.
Yes.
Well, I keep making jokes.
That may be what he does tomorrow. Who knows?
Right. Just give him time. I don't want to give him ideas. Right. Well, I keep saying I'm still looking for that Canadian husband who's willing to be marriage-minded by November.
Yeah, that's a wise move.
Yeah, it's either going to be that or I'm just going to be like, you know what? I will do this myself. So we're going to go like a Hupke Guth ticket at some point, or Guth Hupke, or whichever. We will be co-presidents. We will get this figured out.
You go first, please. I want to be like Biden.
Just chilling.
Be sort of the hype man.
Giving people awkward back rubs. I think we could rock the White House. I'm just saying, it would be good. All right.
It would be a pleasure to serve.
It would indeed. Rex Hupke, always a pleasure. Thanks for being with us tonight and staying up late.
You bet. Thanks for having me. It's good to talk to you.
Good talking to you. Talk to you soon. All right, my friends, we're going to take a little break, get you the news, all that good stuff, back in just a bit on 720 WGN. We're doing more rocking out than talking is the thing about tonight, Craig. 720 WGN, Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez, and we're rocking out. As I said, more than we're talking, we're rocking out because all the good songs are happening. So, my friends, have you seen this thing that's rolling around somewhat Twitter, but mostly Facebook, where people list their first seven jobs? I think it's interesting, especially the longer I've known the person and the different ways I've known that, you know, if I, like a former boss of mine posted her first seven and I was like, wow, she worked at Dairy Queen. I never knew that because I only knew her as an executive. She was my boss at the time, right? But this thing, essentially, it's like you list the first seven jobs that you had, and then you tag people to go do the same. And you, or on Twitter, you just use a hashtag and you say, here are the first seven jobs that I have. I find this immensely entertaining. Apparently, there's a whole swath of people that do not, and they're mostly very young people. And there was a where was that story that we were talking about on the break, Craig? Something about where
give me 1 second. It wasn't
It was like not like the Atlantic or New York Times, but it was like a
right.
lighter reading.
Essentially, what it said is that the youngest generation seems to not be too impressed with this trend. Like teenagers aren't interested in the first seven jobs.
So Generation Z, the people mm-hmm. younger than millennials.
Correct. This is from Bloomberg.com.
Bloomberg, that's who it was. And so what is Bloomberg's hypothesis about why the young people do not give a damn about all the hard work we did as Gen Xers?
That's a really good question. Many teens and their parents now have their have other priorities than starting out working low wage jobs is the first thing it says.
Well, that was not the situation in the Guth household because
no.
It was the morning after my 14th birthday. My dad woke me up about 5 o'clock in the morning and he goes, hello, you're 14 now. You've had a day of being 14. You have a job. You're coming to work with me and you're going to wash dishes. And what 14-year-old girl, because we want to play with like, you know, nail polish. And at the time I was, by 14, I was totally painting my nails black and I was starting to be a little bit goth. So I was not happy with that. But he was like, you need to because he worked in restaurants and he worked in kitchens and stuff. And he was like, you need to understand that if the dishwashers are pissed, the whole kitchen falls apart. No executive chef, star of a chef, can be a star without happy dishwashers. Everybody needs to be cool in the kitchen, and it starts with the dishwashers. And
that's true.
And if they're angry or overwhelmed, ain't nothing going to happen.
Backbone.
And I was like, Dad, I am not feeling this. I was so pissy about it. But you know what? He was totally right. And I've told him that. You were totally right. So that was one of the first things I did. But for like a few weeks before that, there was like a, I don't know if this counts, but technically the first like interacting with public thing I did, I was 13 and it was like an air show at the airport, the like commercial airport near our house. I was instructed to have like a cart full of ice cream bars and just sell them to people. But it was kind of for charity or something. I don't know. I don't think I got paid in anything other than ice cream. But I guess I had to deal with people and take their money. So that's sort of a job. So that was really the first thing. And then I was like washing the dishes for a little while. And then they were like, okay, you've managed to not screw this up too badly. So on the weekends, you can now make some sandwiches for the one part of the restaurant. So I was like,
ooh.
Right. I was making sandwiches. And I was like, I'm working in the food service area now. Like I felt really big about that. Oh my God. And then after that, I worked in a haunted house and I...
That sounds awesome.
I could never do that job now. It was really fun because I had like makeup and crazy stuff and I was laying kind of on top of a tunnel that people had to walk through. And as soon as they walked through, my hands were hanging and I would try to pat at the top of their heads and scream at them. I would shriek bloody murder at them. I could not even come close to that now.
Do you have a whole backstory for your character that touched people's heads?
No.
Was there, okay.
I was just some dead chick that would just pat at the top of their heads and scare the
crap
out of them.
How did you get that job? You're just like, I want to do this?
Well, I had a friend who worked in a costume shop.
Oh.
And it was like costume rentals and stage makeup and some kind of like magic stuff there.
Ooh.
But it was like people that lived and breathed Halloween. Like the guy was really into Halloween.
That's a good thing to be.
Yeah. And they were fun people. So my friend kind of was like, I know people, like I know someone who would be into this. And she recruited me, which led to my next job was working there with the costumes, which was fun because people would come in during the year with weird stuff and they'd be like, okay, I need to rent a chicken suit. Please don't ask me any questions. Like, fine. I won't. Just other than what size of a chicken suit would you like, sir? I won't ask you or judge you or anything.
That's totally fine. Everything's fine.
I'm sure it's perfectly reasonable for you to want lederhosen and a bullwhip.
Right.
That's fine.
And you're bringing it back later today. That's totally fine.
That's fine. As long as it's dry cleaned, I don't give a damn. Whatever. I'm a teenage girl and I'm goth by this point. I don't care. So there was that. What were your first jobs?
I actually just wrote them down as you were talking. I first worked at Meijer. I was a cart wrangler,
if you know
the grocery store.
Sure.
Then I was at Jersey Mike's as a sub maker. I then actually was a baseball announcer for a minor league baseball team. I then worked at Applebee's as a cook, and then later Applebee's as a waiter. I switched from cook to waiter because I wasn't good at making things. And I don't know why they put me at that job at first. They're like, you're probably better just writing things than making the stuff. And I said, yeah, that makes sense. Then I was an RA for school.
I can totally see that.
Yep. And I worked at the bookstore as well.
What I think is interesting is how many jobs it takes for people to get into the professions they are now in, like in that list. Because my first seven, no, not really. Like the closest was like that costume shop. And then I did an internship at a theater.
Yeah, I didn't count my internship because I actually also interned at a radio station.
See, I think that counts.
Okay.
You had to show up on time and
do stuff. Yeah, and do stuff. I even ran like the sports games.
If my dumbass selling ice cream bars at an airport on the tarmac.
That's amazing.
Because there was just like planes out and people could go walk around looking at them.
Right.
Right. So if that counts, please.
Well, number eight on my list would have been being a bartender at Navy Pier for an outside kiosk.
Oh, God, that sounds horrible.
Yeah. Making vodka slushies.
No.
Best vodka slushies.
No.
Yeah.
No.
I'm sad that one didn't make the list.
I have bartended a couple different times. And
for
I had
real
fun.
Bartending too, though, it sounds like. I was making like seven different drinks. That was the total amount of choices.
And it was in like a jug.
You
just had to pour it.
Most of them were in jugs.
No, I had to do the for real kind.
Oh, wow.
I had fun though.
I think it's a fun job even the way I did it.
Because I like to listen to, like, I like to hear people's, like, what is your deal? I love to just tell me your situation. And I always thought that was interesting. People will confide in their bartender. They will just say some things.
Is that more your regulars or people that you're never going to see again that told you the
Both.
Most? Okay.
Both. One time, a total stranger, I was working on my birthday and one of my coworkers came up and pulled me to the side of the bar and she was like, I have to take off, but I wanted to give you your birthday card. Have a good one. She gave me a hug. And a guy at the bar, the first time I'd ever laid eyes on him, saw that and he closed out his tab and he said, oh, I heard it was your birthday. Here's an extra $5. And I'm like, oh, thanks. I appreciate that. He came back and for a minute I thought it was creepy, but there were legitimately no strings attached. He said, you know what? I've been married for 20 years. My wife's out of town and her birthday's a really big deal to her. And I hope, I noticed you're not married. You're not wearing a ring if you are, but I didn't want you to, I don't know. I feel bad that you're working on your birthday. And he went and got flowers. He's like, I'm not trying to be a creep. I wanted you to have these on your birthday. And he said, I'm leaving. I'm not a creep. It's all good.
That sounds really nice.
It was very nice.
Huh.
Later that same night, a guy came into my bar who I had seen before. And that evening he said, hey, since I sort of know you, could I buy your socks at the end of your shift? I like socks. And I'm like, no, sir, you may not.
Holy Jesus.
And then I was like, wait, how much are we talking about?
Yeah, really, there's a price.
It's kind of
socks.
A victimless crime.
Really, it is. Socks is a weird choice. Not that I'm saying for him to pick anything else, but that's odd. I don't know a lot of people that would just randomly buy socks from other people.
This became a thing. He asked me more than once.
Was he sockless? Maybe he just
No. Because then on another occasion, he came in and he was like, I will give you $50 because I would come around to the other side of the bar and straighten all the bar stools
sure,
a couple times a shift.
Sure.
And he was like, Next time you come around there and do that, I will give you $50 to stomp on one of my feet and make it look like an accident. I'm like, that's contact.
Yeah,
like
that's
it's one thing to sell
somebody
socks.
That's true.
I know.
But $50 to step on a guy's foot
and make it look like an accident. But
right.
That, like, I don't want to touch people. I don't.
Oh, got it.
Because
you have a shoe on.
I've got a shoe, but I don't know what his reaction to that's going to be.
And how much are we talking? Did he want like a full stomp, or could you just casually?
I didn't let it get that far. I was
okay,
like, no, I we're good.
$50.
We're good.
Got
we're
it.
Good.
Did you sell him your socks?
I will neither confirm nor deny.
Oh man, I wonder how negotiation for that goes too. Because if he's asking a almost stranger, you got to think you can talk him up. You got to think whatever the first base price was. There's several.
Craig, you say that like I didn't.
I'm not sure. No one's confirming or denying anything, but I assume that you could ask for about double or triple.
I have a springtime birthday.
Sure.
And so it's not appropriate to walk around without socks that time of year.
Right.
So perhaps one could say, I will need sock alternatives. I will need new socks and they will need to be packaged.
That's true. That is very, very true.
At which point, you can do whatever the hell you want with my old socks. That's less laundry for me. That may have been what I said.
Okay.
And I may have said it's going to, if you think.
You or someone else in this in a similar situation.
Me or someone else could have said,
right.
$100, these socks, $100 in new socks in a package, they're yours.
They're all yours.
Yeah. Maybe that's the thing that I said.
Sure.
Maybe.
I would sell my socks for $100.
Oh,
it's so easy.
That's a thing. I mean, people like
got
that.
It.
No, there's a, there was a story I read about like the Craigslist and eBay sort of like black market for used socks, pantyhose, and footwear.
Sure.
I don't judge what anybody wants to do. Like,
no.
Dude, let your freak flag fly in the way that it works for you and makes you feel good and loved and special.
Amen.
And as long as it's not hurt anybody, I don't care.
Right.
But I don't necessarily understand any of it involving feet.
Yeah, that one I've never really understood either. But again, when we talk about the price of a pair of socks, it's definitely $100 or under. It's definitely around that area, for sure.
Or over 100,
right, yeah, or
maybe.
Well over, maybe.
Yeah, like I'm done. Anyway, that got to a weird place. We were just talking about an innocent little meme of our first seven jobs. Good times, friends. Good times. Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez. So many of my dreams have come true just during this program because I've managed to get the Smiths, the Ramones, the Cure, all the Talking Heads, all of these bands on WGN. I'm super excited about that because rock and roll, people, seriously. Okay, we were talking before the break about this meme that's going around where you list your first seven jobs, and we were talking about ours, and it got to a weird place quickly. Esmeralda, have you done this meme about the first seven jobs?
I haven't.
Have you seen it?
I have seen it, yeah.
What were your first seven?
I was a... hostess at Baker Square.
All right.
And then I worked at Bath and Body Works. I did stock. What else did I do? I used to work, it was market research essentially, where I showed previews to people at movie theaters and ask them a few questions for 60 seconds.
Sure.
Watch a movie trailer. And then I worked for Camel as well, doing hawking Camel cigarettes at convenience stores. And convenience stores and smoke shops.
You were a cigarette peddler?
Yeah, well, these people were smoking anyway. It wasn't like I was going to stop them in any form, as long as they smoked Camels.
Interesting.
What else did I do? I had a lot of odd jobs. I was a shoe delivery person. I worked for a cobbler.
Oh.
And they were mainly for downtown, so I dealt with a lot of fancy people's shoes.
Fancy shoes.
And then there was I bartended as well.
Yeah,
how many is that?
That's a one. That's a thing we've all done.
Oh, and then assistant producer for Jonathan Brandmeier. That was another job.
So within your seven, you got to the thing you're doing now.
Yeah.
See, my first seven, I don't really get close. The closest thing is I work at a costume shop. That's not really at all close to what I'm doing now.
Yeah, there's large stretches of time. So.
Yeah. There's that. So what did you? Question to you both, Craig and Esmeralda. What did you want to be when you grew up? When you were a kid,
I wanted to be a pediatrician.
Oh.
And I realized I am not good at a lot of school.
Children. Oh.
That too. I'm not too big. I actually was thinking, I'm like, I'm going to be one of those pediatricians in an office.
Nice.
Where I don't have to really have to deal with that many people.
Like a research pediatrician.
Sure.
Sure.
And then I realized it's no good for me, and I liked pop culture way more. So
sure.
Figured that out in high school. Thank goodness.
What age are we talking about for
Whenever.
Job? Okay, because superhero was my first desire.
Perfectly valid. I'm working on that still.
Are you?
Yeah.
How's it going?
Fine.
Well, you costume shop. That would be connected to your new profession.
Yeah, and I punched that one guy in the throat as we were talking about
Correct.
Earlier. So
throat puncher.
I'm close.
Man.
I can't fly, and I don't have a lasso of truth. But
people
otherwise,
all have different powers.
I know.
Yeah. And then as I got older, I wanted to be a cop. A priest at one point.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Whoa.
My grandmother convinced me to be a priest for like a couple years, right around when I was getting confirmed. I'm Catholic, so I got confirmed at 13, and there was a couple years there where the occupation was priest. And then I realized that wasn't going to work.
Because of the ladies.
Yeah, because of that part. Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Right? And then eventually probably this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Esmeralda, what about you?
What do you mean?
Oh,
pediatrician.
Oh, yeah. Duh. That's right. Yeah, yeah. Duh. That's right. Already, I can't even see that on you, so I've already forgotten that story. Because,
right.
like, you just.
Great. Thank you.
No,
research pediatrician.
No,
by the
not
way.
Because I can't see you doing it, but because, like, you're so a radio person. You're so doing the thing.
Did anyone tell you to do radio when you were young? Is there anyone who said, like, man, your voice is so great for that? Or
no,
your personality?
No, never. Oh, I never even thought about that as a kid. I mean, I listened. Insane, like that's all I did was listen to music and listen to the radio.
Yeah.
So it's as I've grown up naturally, I was like, wow, no, that makes more sense.
You know what is interesting? I have like my parents saved all of my diaries, and I've written a diary my whole life, and they mailed them to me when they downsized, and I reread them, and there are really interesting things in there in which I like got a little bit psychic. I predicted some stuff. One of them, there is a page and a half in which in my like child scrawl, I'm writing about how I only hear boys talking on the radio and I don't hear girls talking about radio or talking on the radio, and how I am listening to music on the radio and how girls only sing about boys making them sad, and how boys sing about everything. And so I was like, I think boys have it better, and or we need to sing about more stuff. But I picked up on gender disparity both in rock music and with show hosts at like, I don't know, six.
That's incredible and sort of makes a lot of sense.
So that sort of explains half the axes I grind on the air now.
That's so amazing.
Knowing that.
Have you ever wanted to publish any of that stuff? Put out your little diaries?
I've read it in public before.
Really? Where, yeah. For what? What did you read it
for? A couple of reading series. I've gotten up and done it. I read some of it at the Laugh Factory.
Awesome.
One time that was pretty funny. Some of it is ridiculous, especially when I first learn how to swear, but I'm not really doing it right and I'm using the words wrong. That's pretty entertaining. And there are swaths in which I'm describing this babysitter that I had who used to sneak boys over, and they would make out on the couch when she thought I was sleeping, but they were also like making a little bit of noise. So I'd, you know, wake up and go see what they were doing. And the way I describe it, especially when I'm really little, at one point I open by saying my brother, who's a lot younger than me, so he was a tiny baby at the time. I'm like, he is such a dumb baby and he throws up all the time and babies are so stupid. And I like just like complaining about this infant, my poor little brother, who's now a super genius and a lot bigger than me and started to like kick my ass in return once he was a teenager. But he was a baby at the time and I was like complaining about him, and then she snuck her boyfriend in and they were making out and he was calling her baby. And I'm like, she shouldn't kiss anybody if he calls her a baby. What a dumbass. And I was just like, my little mind was boggled that you would kiss anyone that called you a baby, because what a big insult. And then I went on for quite a bit about how also they kiss really weird. Like they're licking each other's lips. That's disgusting, because they're, you know, making out like, whoa, because they got, you know, a whole couch to hook up on. And then one night my parents, like the movie was sold out or whatever happened, and my parents came back home early and caught them. And I wrote in all caps, and I was like, diary, want to know what my dad said? And I wrote in caps, but I didn't really know the swear words because I was too little. But I wrote like,
I don't know if I can even say.
Should I have my finger on the dump?
Fake word on the air.
Got it.
But I was like, get the F, but I didn't say F right, out of my gar-darned house. And like, I had that word wrong, but like my dad walked in and like started dropping F-bombs and threw this kid out of the house and then like threw his shirt after him. But I was trying to say like, hey, diary, want to know what my dad said? And I'm trying to spell F-bombs and failing miserably, but it was, you know, it was cute. Good times. But yeah, I've read them in public before just to mortify myself and horrify people at what a like pretentious little kid I was.
That sounds great. I want to hear them.
Good times. But we, in fact, must take a break and go to news and all that good stuff. And then we will talk all about diaries or whatever comes up next here in just a bit on 720 WGN. Oh, 720 WGN. It's Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez. I am enjoying the crap out of all the music that you are playing tonight, Craig, and I thank you so much for playing it. You are speaking to my 1993 self in a deep way.
I'm trying very hard to do that, so that's awesome. That's
grateful.
Awesome. It's working.
I'm great. It's all nostalgia, because right before the news, we were talking about what you wanted to be when you grew up. And I think I love when I run into people that are like, I'm doing the thing. My first grade best friend, she's doing the thing. I'm doing the thing. We both are like doing the thing we said we were going to do. And that's pretty fun. She nailed it. Like, nailed it.
Yeah. No, and I talked to some friends that I had in high school who are doing their thing, and they're not even making a lot of money at their thing, but they're so much happier than some of my friends that are, like, making a lot more because they're doing what they want to do.
Have you been to any high school reunions? I don't actually know how old you are, so I don't know.
I am 30, and I have had the 10-year come up. I didn't go.
Okay.
I got invited once on Facebook, and then the organizer was a good friend of mine in high school, so she sent several additional messages, and I kept saying, like, I might make it. I'll try to make it.
Gee, really going to try to make it?
Yeah,
thanks.
I would love to. No, I'm not gonna make it.
Well, they're interesting. So I am at the stage of my life in which my 20th reunion has come and gone, and I look forward to many more. At that time, it was – I mean, at the 10-year didn't do anything for me because I was sort of already kind of in touch with people. – Nobody had done that much, right? We hadn't been out of school that long. So no one came in like with a, you know, a Ferrari and a supermodel, right? Nobody did that. But the 20 got interesting because A, you're like, holy crap, how was that 20 years ago? Oh my God. And also, I don't know, it was interesting. And it's exactly as people always say it is. Like the people that drove you crazy, and like the mean girls, you know, from high school. I think some people peak in high school and they talk about it like it's the best days of their lives. And I kind of got along with every group and suspect you were the same way. And I mean, I just kind of like, I wasn't Ferris Bueller. I wasn't like the popular one of every group, but I got along well enough with everybody. But like,
you know, I transitioned to that. For a little while, I was in like one specific clique from my grade school. And then as it went on, I slowly became friends with like every sort of group.
Yeah. Because see, the tricky part about me is that I was a goth girl, but I'm also silly and goofy and an incurable optimist.
There you go.
So I couldn't be brooding. And so like I did.
Wait, how do you be goth then?
Just in look.
Right.
Black lipstick.
But then you were really peppy and nice?
I don't know, peppy.
Okay.
But like cutting up and being a smart ass like I do.
Okay, got it.
Right.
Yeah.
So I didn't, I mean, the goth kids were kind of like, I don't know about her.
We accept her, but we're confused.
She's wearing a Smith shirt.
Right.
When she's got safety pins and she's got her nose pierced, but like.
It all looks right.
It looks right, but gosh, she's like, hey guys, good morning. Happy Monday. And they're like, let's set some goals for the week. What are you going to do? And people are like, I don't know what the hell's going on. I don't get her. But then like the peppy pep squad types were like, you're goth. You don't match. Don't match on you.
You need just one friend. I made a friend with one of the cheerleader pep people like my sophomore year. And then they all liked me. And I didn't really know all of them, but they would say like positive things about
me. That's the way to life. You just need one person to be your friend in a given, you know, company or clique or anything or club. You just need the one person to walk you in the door.
And there's always the one person like you too, who's really friendly and kind of nice to everyone. So they sort of help you join all the groups. I was curious about the 10-year though, and what you said, because I didn't have a lot going on. So I didn't really want to go and not have a lot of stories. And I kept thinking about how much could have been achieved in this first 10 years. Like, how much, who could possibly have just taken off completely? No one invented Post-its, so I have no idea.
We invented Post-its. That's a great movie.
Yeah, it is.
Michelle's the best.
Sure is. Yeah. So, I mean, I was tempted to go because I didn't think anyone would upstage me too much. But there is sort of that. I want to have something really put in place. Before 20, I want to make sure I'm doing amazing things.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah. See? Because that one's coming up for me. And that's the one where you think a lot of people have now had time to really achieve stuff.
Yeah.
Or lie. Maybe you just lie. Maybe.
Well, but what's interesting is that, you know, I didn't even need to go to anything to know this, but the kids that were like quiet, shy, even the kids that were like getting picked on for being nerdy, that were perfectly nice, but just like the popular kids picked on them, like those guys are bajillionaires. And it's exactly what people say. Like the quiet ones are suddenly like, oh, wow, that guy turned out really good looking. And he's... whole family is really good looking and they have a lot of wealth for, I don't know what he invented, but it's something great. You know, like there's that.
Yeah, his life is just amazing now and he's sort of so happy about it. He doesn't even care that we were mean to him or some people were mean to him.
I was not mean to him. No.
I was never mean to anybody either. No. Yeah. But I do like that idea too because that sounds nice.
I have thoroughly enjoyed though, like one, we talk a lot about the negative parts of social media. I have thoroughly enjoyed that aspect of Facebook, that I have reconnected with some people from high school and middle school. And it's so interesting how things that were not on our radar and you know, people that I was like friendly with but not close with, I didn't know particularly well, suddenly I find myself being really good friends with them. And like, wow, we think so many of the same things. And even though we chose completely different life paths and moved to different places in the world and all that stuff, like, wow, we really think a lot alike and do and support a lot of the same things. And I think that's cool. I love that because I think there's just something so like grounding and rewarding about knowing people from your past.
Yeah, it's funny you say that too, because that was sort of the reason I didn't go to my 10-year reunion is when they made the Facebook group, we all started to talk in that.
Yeah, you're
and
like,
I kind of felt like I did it. Yeah.
I wonder.
I sort of felt like I connected with everybody.
I wonder about the future of high school reunions for that reason.
Right. If it'll just be like a G-chat. Just everyone will get on G-chat for a day and then it's over.
And then we're done.
Right.
Yeah.
This is really fun. We all had a good time.
I went as a favor to a friend to his reunion. This was years ago. He had gone through a really rough divorce and he just was like, I just don't think I have it in me to walk in there by myself right now. Will you go just as my friend date? And then as we're walking in, he's like, will you sort of pretend to be my date? I'm like, damn it. Fine. I'll do this. But it like good friends, so I didn't mind doing that. But I was like, I swear, if you like pat me
right.
or
if
kiss my
happens,
cheek, I will break your arm. But like, nonetheless, like, fine, I will pretend
punch.
To be. Yeah, I will pretend to be your special lady friend for
sure.
A night. And you know what? It was fun, but it was a tiny town and a tiny school, and so it was so small that the everybody. Every year came back for the reunion, not just the graduating class, like hitting a milestone, but everybody. And it was, I loved it. I thought it was a really fun time because it wasn't about like putting on airs and being pretentious. And all. It was like, if you attended, it's because you have graduated from this high school at some point and you are still alive. And so it was including like seniors that just graduated that year all the way to like the class of 1920. The two people that were still left from it were like there. I mean, so many people. But we all went into the cafeteria and the gym and they had set up tables and we all got like a school lunch tray and were served dinner on that. And then if you had a milestone reunion, then you went to another party. So we were like in the cafeteria.
That sounds perfect. That's what
having
it sounds.
Creamed corn and chicken fingers.
I had a lovely lunch lady, too, who always called everyone sweetie.
See?
I'd want her to be back more so than anything else. I hope that she goes to everything and gives us brownies and calls us sweetie. Because that's what she did. She was in charge of brownies and she called everyone sweetie.
Aww.
Yeah, she's the best human I've ever known, probably.
We have a caller. Let's take our caller. Hi, Linda. You're on WGN.
Hi. Yeah, I just turned the radio on and heard you guys talking. I graduated in 1963. And I was on class reunion committee. We've had our 50th, and mm-hmm. we get together now once a year. Sometimes we'll just go up to O'Hare Field by Rosemont because everybody gets a plane and flies in that can make it. Now, next Saturday, a bunch of us are getting together at my girlfriend's out in Cedar Lake, Indiana.
Wasn't
They're
that
coming
nice?
From all over, and we're going to spend the whole day there enjoying like a picnic, and everybody's just getting together of those that can make it.
I love that. How many people? How big a group?
So far, we figured maybe about 40. And there's others that want to, you know, would like to come, but they're out in North Carolina or whatever. They've all moved out of the Chicago area, and those that can make it do. Now, maybe this year some will make it. Next year they won't be able to, but somebody else will. And then the ones that are out in Florida, I've made it a couple of times around Christmas in January to see them when I go visit my brother. They live down in like Boca and Fort Lauderdale area.
I love that.
And we have a good time. We just get together and talk. How's the kids and mm-hmm. how we're all doing or whatever it is. And my girlfriend, her name is Dottie, she usually has what they call a Christmas cup party. Because we graduated from Bowen High School on the far south side, and at that time it was predominantly Jewish. Mm-hmm. So the Gentiles and the Jews get together, and we call it Christmas Cup.
I love it.
We celebrate a little bit of Christmas and Hanukkah together. And we bring potluck dishes from the different ethnic groups that come, and we have many different groups that come.
I love that. Look at that. You have got it all going on and everything like all figured out and all the people coming together. I love this, Linda.
And the thing of it is, too, now, some of us, our fathers worked in the steel mills. Some parents worked as in salespersons in stores. Mm-hmm. A couple of them owned small businesses, printers. One was even, he repaired shoes. His dad repaired the shoes and things like that. So nobody came from high money. Yeah. We all went to the same school. Some made it and did a little better than the rest. And but yet nobody puts anybody like, oh, we're in this income bracket, mm-hmm. and you're not.
That's good.
Everybody is just the same. There's lawyers and doctors and teachers, and all, we're all together, and everybody is just the same.
I love that. What a wonderful group of friends. What a gift to have that group in your life and to be with them all the time and make time for each other. That's lovely. I'm thrilled to hear that. Are any of you connecting on Facebook or any other social media or anything like that?
Yes, they do. Yes. Mm-hmm. They're in with the class reunions and that, and it's Bowen High School.
Nice.
And when we have our reunions, we had them a couple of times. Other classes said, hey, can we come too? Because we all kind of knew each other and that. And we said, yeah. And they come and they still keep in touch.
Lovely. Well, thank you for that very uplifting call, Linda. I'm happy to know that that's happening right here in our city, that you guys are getting together and staying close for so long.
Yeah. And, you know, it could be done a lot of times, like you were saying, bullies or whatever. But when we sit around and we talk about different people, what happened to this one or that one, they, you know, we say how some of them were kind of teased and things like that. And they said, well, we didn't mean it intentionally. And we says, yeah, but if it was you, how would you have felt?
Well, sure.
And they sit back and they've told their children, and now they're working on the grandchildren about this teasing and bullying, that it's not always the fun that people think it is, because these other people have feelings too.
Well, certainly.
And just put yourself in their place.
Certainly. Thanks very much for the call, Linda. Have a great, great evening. Mark, hi, you're on WGN.
Hello, Amy. I have been to every reunion except my fifth, had a blast at every one of them. I've also been to my high school choir director's retirement party and the memorial service for him, and I'm about to go to my junior high music teacher's reunion. And
wow.
I've been trying to figure out over the years, why is my sister almost anti-reunion compared to me? I think It has to do with personality, style, and attitude. My sister tends to be, as nearly as I can tell, an out of sight, out of mind kind of a person. Mm. Because when she went to her first class reunion, she was like, well, I was bored. I didn't know anybody. I'm not going again. Whereas when I went, I was like, boy, isn't it fun to connect with these people that I didn't even know about back in high school?
Right.
You know, and why not do the newness of it, too? Why confine yourself to the people that you clicked with back then? They may have changed, so you don't click with them anymore. And some people that you never knew about may have changed, and you've changed in a way that you would really connect now.
Yeah, I agree. And that, you know what? I've had that experience. There are people that I knew and liked fine, but I didn't know very well in high school that now I feel very close to. Did you go to school here around Chicago or somewhere else?
No, and I'm listening on old-fashioned radio in Nebraska tonight. I'm traveling away from the Chicago area. That's where I live. I live in Aurora, but I grew up in Clarence, New York, near Buffalo.
Oh, sure, yeah. I know where that is.
And by the way, I used to get WGN there, too.
Yeah, the colder and clearer it is in Chicago, definitely.
Well,
Well, thanks for the call, Mark. I appreciate you listening, and thanks for calling in.
Yeah, I can only say to listeners, you know, make the most of it. There's a lot of richness there for you.
Couldn't agree more. Thanks very much. Have a lovely evening.
You too.
All right. All right, my friends, we're going to take a little break, and we will continue this conversation in just a bit here on 720 WGN. Wake me up before you go-go. I don't want to miss it when you hit that house. 720 WGN. You know, that song makes me, before the show, we were getting ready to talk to the folks at the National Weather Service, and we were watching, I showed esteemed producer Greg Collins this video of a weather, like a meteorologist or weather reporter in Omaha with a pumpkin on his head doing a dance to the Ghostbusters song. And if you have not seen this, Google it. But this song makes me want to dance like that. But my friends, the reason that song was played is because this is the time in the show when we do the last call, where we prank call somebody. And I'm getting someone back who's done this to me when he filled in for Patty.
Yeah, I'm
Vasquez.
Thrilled you're doing this, actually, by the way. And he will be filling
scared.
In on Friday.
I'm so scared he's going to answer.
Yeah, I think he's filling in with Esmeralda, too, if I'm not mistaken, on
I'm
Friday.
I'm terrified he's going to answer.
No.
Please don't answer.
No, it's late enough. Okay, long pause.
Hey, it's Mark. Sorry I missed your call. Please leave me a message. I will get back to you.
Is there a beep?
It's a long. There it is.
There's the beep. Hi, Mark Carmen. This is Amy Guth. I'm getting you back for that time that you prank called me on the air late in the last call segment of Patty's show when you were filling in for her with Rachel Woodall. And so I'm getting you back, and I am prank calling you. I was a little terrified that you would answer and have an early morning, and then I just ruined your life. So I'm super glad you did not answer.
I think we do know he has an early morning, by the way, but I'm really glad that he didn't answer.
I'm glad he didn't answer because I would be upset about that. So so let's everybody, Craig is here. I'm here.
Yeah, hey.
Esmeralda's up there somewhere. She stepped away for a moment. Yeah. But so here's what happened on the show tonight. We did a lot of fun things. Where's my running order? I had a whole little list of things I was going to tell you about.
We have a rundown somewhere.
But essentially, let's see, we talked with the National Weather Service about this 105-day heat that's coming up, or 105-degree heat that's coming up.
On Thursday.
He broke it down for us, and we kind of antagonized him a little bit, like, just tell us, just commit.
Right.
Is it going to be fall, like bad fall and winter? And he was like, the climate data suggests winter's going to be cold. So we did that. And then we talked with Kelsey Kennedy from Quartz, who wrote a really interesting piece about this very terrible holiday called Earth Overshoot Day, which is essentially like if we have 365 days of resources, at what point in the year do we blow through them? And that was this year, August 8th. Every year it gets earlier because we suck and we can't keep to our budget of resources.
Right. Mark, we're completely out of resources. Stop using anything
Mark,
for the rest of the year.
I hope all
your
lights are off for like a week. Don't
please.
Don't turn on your lights or any. Don't even just reuse all the things. Don't buy new things. For crying out loud, Mark. It's up to you, Mark.
Please, Mark Carmen. You know, he also seems to be a guy who probably has cupped before. I don't think that he was surprised by cupping. I think he's done it.
Maybe. I don't know.
He plays tennis a lot.
You never know. If
he's
he has any, he should.
He's very athletic.
Cupping, Mark, as you've seen on like Michael Phelps, like all the you know, the marks on him for like it's like tennis ball size marks.
It is part of like traditional Chinese medicine, and I have done cupping, so I just brought my acupuncturist right up on in here. She's excellent. She's great. I'm athletic. I run into muscle soreness, and she'll just like throw a needle in a meridian, or she will throw a cup on a muscle, and it's done, and it's all good. And I have like a giant tennis ball size hickey on my knee or my shoulder or whatever, but I'm telling you, it works, and it's good stuff because it picks up that subcutaneous layer and lets all this extra, like helps all the lactic acid get out of the muscle, and that speeds up blood flow, and then you let it go, and you get a little bit hyper, but then you crash. So that's a thing we talked about, and she has an excellent blog and an excellent book, and you should read them. There it was.
Oh, no, it's almost over. That's the warning.
That's the warning.
Good. We're going to keep going. Warning.
So then we talked to Rex Hupke, and we dealt with all the things. Media literacy.
Your recording has reached the maximum length.
And it's over.
And it's over.
That's so great,
though. That was fun. We got a lot in there.
You're welcome, Mark Carmen. You're welcome.
He's going to love that.
I think so.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'm sad that you didn't tell him more Rex Hupke stuff, because that was really great.
We should call him back. No.
We should call him up. Let's call everybody back.
He'll wake up, and he'll be like, what are you doing?
Actually, at 2 phone calls, almost everybody wakes up. When we do, if I dial the number and then hang up for some reason, usually everybody answers the second time, because that seems like an emergency.
Right.
You know.
Because it seems like an emergency.
Right. Calling someone twice in a row always seems
something's
like
wrong.
Yep.
Why else would Amy Guth be calling at 2 in the morning unless it was an emergency or you're getting prank called on the air? Ah. That was fun. I'm glad I got to experience that last call thing. I almost said, let's call my mom, but I think she would be so mad. And she would answer, and she would be like, she would swear on the air. She would be mad.
You know, the first time Mark did it, he called his old, like, coach, his old baseball or basketball coach or something. So, yeah.
Did
I think everybody
answer?
Does that. And they had a nice conversation, actually.
Oh, God.
I know.
I don't think my mom and I would. She would be so mad at me for calling her at 2 in the morning. And she's in another time zone, so it's like 3 in the morning there. She'd be like, what in the hell are you doing? Hang up. She'd be so mad.